This is Valley Edition. I'm Carrie Klein. Right now, roughly a million Californians lack access to safe drinking water. And while a lack of money or local leadership can stand in the way of fixes, so can California's Byzantine water management system. A new article on UC Davis's California Water blog shines a light on just how complicated water governance can be and why it matters. Here to talk about it with me is one of the article's two authors, Kristen Dobbin, currently a UC Davis PhD student.
This blog post is all about the different types of governance structures or organizations that are operating drinking water systems across the state of California. Basically, we have known for a very long time that small drinking water systems struggle the most, and we know a lot of small systems are out of compliance in the state, but we don't have a lot of information about how those small systems are governed, or even the large systems in the state. We don't collect data as a state about drinking water governance. And so this blog post and this research effort was really driven by a desire on our part to understand what is the drinking water governance landscape of California, how are these systems organized, who's operating them, and what does that mean for drinking water quality and the human right to water in California.
Okay, so there are roughly 3,000 public water systems here in California, as you said. And as you said, there are lots of different kinds of ownership. Sometimes they're owned by the city, by the county, by a joint powers authority, or by private owners. We don't have time to go through every possible ownership option. But what are some of the key differences in how water systems can be owned here in California? And how does that translate into a different experience for water users?
So kind of the key difference that we do know a fair amount about is whether it's owned privately or publicly. And that for that kind of category, we do collect data as a state. So we have been kind of dealing with that in our analyses for years, whether systems are private or public. And we know that the majority of small systems are private, whereas the majority of large systems are public. But beyond that, there's a lot of diversity in those two categories. And so what we really wanted to do with this project is dive into the details with our kind of a hunch on our part that the details did matter. And so, for example, like kind of how those details could matter is that amongst the publicly owned systems, you could be an incorporated city or you could be an unincorporated community that's being served by an independent special district. And even among those unincorporated communities, those independent special districts, we found 11 different types, and that those different types determine the structure of the governing board, which includes how those directors are elected, how many directors serve, and for how long they serve. And it also, being a publicly owned system, means that you are eligible to access public financing. So a lot of the proposition money that we have passed in water bonds in past years is usually limited to publicly owned systems. So that is a big difference for the privately owned systems, which may be not able to access certain types of funding like their public counterparts. And then similarly for the privately owned systems, you may be an investor-owned utility, in which case you have additional regulations by the California Public Utilities Commission. But if you are a user-owned utility, meaning that it's the residents themselves that are owning the utility and the community water system, those regulations don't apply. So there's kind of these complex layers of regulation, of access to finances, of access to solutions, or sometimes also constraints on their actions that all have to do with these details in the governance structure.
And so that's one reason why some water districts have an easier time getting public funding or state funding for a project, and some water districts don't.
Exactly. So there's a lot of implications for how we address struggling water systems that have to do with their governance type.
Okay, and so if we look at your findings a little bit here in this project, if we start with numbers, the sheer total of water systems is already kind of mind-boggling that we have 3,000 here in California. But you were also looking at not only the ownership of each water system, but also the population each one serves, the average number of violations each one has had in the last couple of years. What are some of the more surprising or important data points that you uncovered?
Yeah, so among the really important things we found is that, the first finding that sticks out is the sheer number of distinct governance types. So we went into this expecting that there was a lot of institutional diversity in our drinking water system of California, but we did not expect to find so many distinct types. So we identified 26 different governance types that drinking water systems are being operated under. And amongst those 26, Importantly, there is greater diversity for small systems. So the realm of governance is a lot bigger for the small systems under 10,000 connections or under 500 connections than it is for the really big systems, which tend to be operated by either large private companies or by cities. A second really important finding that we found was that these different structures correspond to kind of different levels of violations. And so one thing we wanted to look at is the number of systems with violations, or is the average of violations per system different between these different types? And we indeed found that there's variation in how the different governance categories perform. In our analysis, cities have an average number of violations per system of only about 1.43 in the last 7 years, whereas, for example, county-operated systems have more than 3 violations per system for that same time period.
That's really interesting. So what does that mean?
What it means is that governance does matter. I think that's the big takeaway from this project and our starting place for future analyses. So now that we have the information of what governance type each system is, we can do a lot more work into figuring out how that governance type is mediating compliance. And so, for example, we have questions about, is it the type of board or the way that directors are elected that is impacting compliance, or perhaps is it access to finance or other access to other solutions in our kind of state water toolbox? So really, we find that governance is playing an important role in differentiating compliance among systems and kind of creating this diverse landscape of drinking water governance in California. And so the next big question is, how is it doing that? And really diving into some of those details that we couldn't before because we quite simply just didn't have the data.
Right. So this all kind of reveals at least some of the reason why it can be so difficult here in California to provide clean drinking water to so many, especially, you know, very underserved, disadvantaged communities.
Right. This project doesn't give us a lot of answers as to kind of how we go about solving it, but provides a lot more information about the disparities in our drinking water system and the struggles of small systems that will hopefully serve as an opportunity or a jumping off point to get to those answers about how we address chronic drinking water disparities in our state.
Very interesting. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Kristen Dobbin is a PhD student at UC Davis studying regional water management and drinking water disparities in California.